Welcome back, everybody, to another podcast from Pragmatic Resilience. Thanks for joining us. You know, here at Pragmatic Resilience, we deal with a whole host of issues in the workplace, whether we're giving keynote speeches or coaching individuals or spending time with teams and organisations that want to be, well, more effective. And we come across a whole variety of questions and situations which people face. And invariably, relationships fare high on that list of issues. And we all know the difficulties caused by poor relationships, whether they're family, personal, or in the workplace. And as you know, the heart of any relationship is trust. So today, we're looking at the thorny question of how do you know if you can trust someone? Now, I'll cut straight to the ideal on this one. And the answer is, if you're asking yourself, how do you know if you can trust someone? Well, ideally, you'll have to use your life experience to let that relationship develop bit by bit until there's a two-way give and take on both sides with mutual understanding and a mutual meeting of mutual needs. So if I can give you a metaphor, imagine you and the other person are standing on opposite sides of the bridge, and beneath the bridge is a valley or a gorge or whatever, but there's an emptiness of fresh air which represents the unknown in that relationship. And you can imagine both you and the other party taking tentative steps toward the middle. And the middle of that bridge represents the optimal point of trust, a meeting of minds, a meeting of lives. And of course, the bridge which spans the unknown can bear the weight of you and the other party. But imagine if the bridge is a simple footbridge and careering toward you from the other side is a juggernaut laden with goods going at 70 miles an hour. Well, the speed and the volume of the expectation of the other party is far more than you or the bridge could cope with. And if the bridge is high above a rocky ravine, then the fall of a broken relationship of rejection, betrayal and disappointment is a long and painful one. And I'm sure you recognise that. So people who have difficulty trusting tend to occupy one of two extremes, the closed clam or the open book. And you've come across them. From the closed clam, there's nothing. There's that arm's length feeling from them, and you're aware that you're getting a surface level of interaction. That's somebody who can't trust. The opposite is the open book, and you know everything about them in 2 minutes of meeting them. There's no boundaries. They try to engender in you an obligation toward them, and they try to cast you as the parent toward their child, toward them as a child, rather. In other words, that the power dynamic of the relationship is not mutually respective. And in this second category, I'd also put bullies, those who try to demand more from you, deny you your views, try to control you. It's the same thing. It's the complete lack of boundaries. And of course, both extremes, whether it's the closed clam or the open book, is very unhealthy and shuts down trust. And I wonder if you find yourself today in relationships of unequal respect. Of course, you're going to be in relationships of unequal power, because if you're a client dependent on the services of an accountant, well, the accountant has power, the same way your boss has power, and so on and so forth. But it's the issue of mutual respect that is at the key here, and whether or not you can trust that person to give you respect. So have you ever asked why, for example, your relationship seemed to follow a pattern, why you fall back into that same pattern over and over? And, you know, it's well worth thinking about. And some of you are at critical point in toxic relationships right now. Others, well, it may not do any harm to take an audit. I remember my own journey, and I'm happy for you to learn from my mistakes. I think in the whole question about trusting people, I think my abusive childhood made me extremely wary of people. I trusted very, very few people, and even those I did trust were on a very tight leash. So it didn't take much for me to get offended and to withdraw from them. But of course, you would have had to, if you'd known me then, you would have had to have looked very hard to discern all of that inside of me, because I covered it all up with extreme sociability, because I'm well able to relate. And I suppose my background and the need to be hypervigilant as a child in what was an extremely unsafe home environment only served to increase my natural sense of intuition. And that meant that I could intuit the needs of other people and meet them and ignore my own. And that's quite a lonely place. But don't you find that you can often overplay your strengths too, so that they rebound on you? I'm thinking of people who are good, pastoral, naturally empathic and caring. And these sorts of people are loved and appreciated by lots of people, but they end up lonely and feeling used by others. Well, it's that person's fault, ultimately, and I'm sorry to be so harsh about it, but you see, that person has used their natural compassion to essentially control people and hold them at a distance. You know, maybe putting people into their debt, or maybe trying to gain and earn love by adopting a subservience stance. But all they've done is educated other people not to respect and meet their own needs, and the result is inevitable and a very lonely one, I can tell you. So I guess I was in my 30s when I realised that my childhood survival patterns were now outdated, outmoded and counterproductive. Not trusting people certainly helped me survive my brutal treatment as a child, but for a 30-odd year old adult trying to raise a family and study and work for a career and make their way in life, well, those childhood patterns were immature and ultimately restrictive. In other words, I had to learn how to trust and avoid being, on the one hand, a closed clam, and on the other hand, an open book. And it seemed that I could end up trusting the wrong people, and also mistrusting the right people, if you know what I mean. So I opened up to people who didn't know me or want to know me, but closed down to good people who had my interests at heart. So, if you're happy to learn from my mistakes, perhaps I can give you 4 suggestions that have served me well in learning how to trust. And I hope you find them useful too. So, 1, what type of relationship is it? Is it a boss, a team member? Is it what we would call, say, an intimate relationship where two people are living and sleeping together? Is it a parent-child? Is it a friend-to-friend? Is it a GP patient, or a relationship where one has professional power over, shall we say, a vulnerable personal client? And I'm thinking here that this would include religious leaders to members of their congregation, or sports coach to children. You get the idea. But my point is that the type of relationship already assumes a framework of what is and what is not appropriate. And that what is appropriate is implicit in the purpose of the relationship in the first place. So this is the first clue then, is the appropriate level of trust is always relative to the type of relationship. So if you identify what type of relationship it is, then that's going to help you know the appropriate level of trust and where to pitch the relationship between the closed clam and the open book. But this leads us then onto our second point, because for people with trust issues, they struggle to calibrate or to pitch the right level of trust, and they find themselves perhaps bouncing back and forth in life between the closed clam and the open book. And what's more, they tend to find themselves occupying those positions very, very quickly and early on in the relationship, as though there were no appropriate level which could be reached gradually. And I think at this point, the psychologists among us would want to refer us to something called attachment theory, which I've referred to in the past. This attachment theory essentially states that our early years experience of being attached to our carers actually spills over then into our adult relationships and how we conduct them. Because neurologically embedded in us are our expectations of who we are, whether we're lovable, what we're worth, and that determines then how we relate. So the healthier the attachment to our parents or carers in those first critical years of our life is going to be reflected in healthy relationships and as an adult. And obviously the opposite is true as well. Now, we're getting quite a number of requests for issues around that coalesce around attachment theory. So perhaps we can look at those in future podcasts, because I have to say it makes complete sense to me. Anyway, the second point is that our trust issues lie deep within our early years experience. And if I can get deep and personal very quickly and suddenly, I could tell you about my lifelong fear, and a deeply embedded fear it was too, of dying alone, friendless, and without family, and going out of the world exactly the same way I came in. And if you know what I'm talking about when I talk about fears which underscore everything in life, contaminate everything in life as a haunting, like ever-present, but thoroughly unconscious reality. And I honestly believe that that fear that I had was rooted in my early childhood experience. You see, in recent years, I've been told that because of the radiation therapy that I received to a tumour on my face in the first 2 years of life, that that presented physical problems which my carers did not know how to deal with. And we're, to be fair, we're talking about the mid-60s. And the result was that I was not touched skin to skin for 2 years, and my carers would wear masks and marigolds for fear of catching anything from the radiation injury to my face. And I wasn't held or hugged. And I wonder how the brain of that infant lying there lonely hour after hour during those critical years was affected by that experience. So, and neuroscientists are discovering more and more about childhood brain development and the lifelong impact which that has across the lifespan of that person. But thankfully, I've recognised that fear. I now no longer have that constant feeling in life of falling into a void and not being able to grab onto anything solid. I've worked it through, and I have to say I have a completely, completely different outlook on my future today. So my second point then is to trace back your relationship patterns to your early history, your relationship with your parents and carers, or whoever it was that was supposed to care for you and maybe didn't. But just one thing before we move on to our third point. Remember, your parents and carers are as human, as fragile and as breakable as you are. So the way that they treated you is a reflection of how they were treated too. So try and get a compassionate and an adult point of view, because you're not out to get revenge after all, are you? So our first point then is, what's the type of relationship? And number two, how to calibrate the level of trust has its roots in childhood. The third point is, how do I learn, in learning how to trust appropriately, is to ask yourself, what's in it for the other person? Now, I'm not being cynical here, because if the other person is your boss, then they have every right to expect you to do a good job. But beyond that, you are not there to prop up or to compensate for their incompetence or inadequacy. And so the expectation of the other person, as I said, is already boundaried into the type of relationship that it is. But there's more wisdom on this, because I have to say that I can trust those with scars. Do you know what I mean? I mean those who have made mistakes and who have learned from them. In other words, people who know how life or certain aspects of life actually work and who are comfortable with who they are because they've learned from those mistakes and they're not spending the rest of their life trying to avoid the consequences. You see, I've learned not to trust people with wounds. Now, wounds are different from scars. Wounds are open, unresolved, unhealed, and possibly infected. Now, of course, I'll relate to them, but the level of trust I have in terms of accepting their advice or input is not something I can be sure about, because I can't be sure what will come across the bridge, whether it's infection or a level of toxicity. The other thing I'd say is that I can trust people who are emotionally invested in me and my well-being and my prosperity for no other reason than that it benefits me, because that's love. That's unconditional love. And that's the type of relationship which can grow step by step, where there's a balance of respect. And what that means then, I suppose, is that if you want that type of relationship in your life, then I have to say you have to make the first steps, because we all reap what we sow. And so if you want people to be kind to you, be kind to them. Start to be kind to them, unless they've completely blown it with a toxic relationship, of course. If you want people to respect you, you respect others. But kindness and respect start with yourself. So if you're not kind to yourself, or you've no self-respect, then you're bringing that into the relationship, and the type of relationship it will turn out to be will be one which will not benefit you. And that's why we've focused a lot in this podcast on what's happening inside of you. The fourth and final lesson then is, remember, relationships ebb and flow. So it's quite appropriate for there to be a season in that relationship where there's a drawdown on you in favour of the other person. But if you're in a relationship which is permanently lopsided against you, and there's no reliability or support from the other person, then it's time to put in some boundaries. And I'd say that only in extreme cases would you be justified in walking away. And might I add, how you walk away is as important as why you walk away. But for the rest of us, putting in boundaries may be a simple matter of not relying on the other party for happiness, for your happiness, or constantly seeking their approval. Or recognising the game playing that's going on. It may mean paying more attention to your needs and spending more time pursuing those. And perhaps it may mean not accepting responsibility for their problems, and so on and so forth. Remember, healthy relationships ebb and flow, but they shouldn't be permanently lopsided. So there you have, those are the four lessons. Number one, what's the type of relationship? Number two, look at the unresolved issues from your childhood, patterns of behaviour, of relationship rather. Number three, what's in it for the other party? And number four, relationships ebb and flow. Well, we've reached the end of this podcast. Apparently now you can subscribe to our podcasts on our website, which is pragmaticresilience.com. I'll say that for you again, pragmaticresilience.com. There's a button at the bottom of the webpage. So keep your questions coming in. We try to answer as many as we can, and keep your suggestions for podcasts coming in as well. So a big shout out to Michaela, who's written in and suggested one, and the title is this: The Day I Realized That I Myself Was the Best Parent That I Could Have. Well, that sounds interesting stuff. So till we meet again, take care and be kind.